Chapter 51. January 6th of year 19. It continued raining for 4 more hours, and afterward the rainwater needed almost half a day to drain. Adam and Eve emerged from the tent, appearing more rested than in quite some time. The rain drumming against the tent fabric was so soothing, and I slept better today than ever before on Proxima B, Eve says. Adam does not say anything. He just nods. He cannot help acting this way, and I accept it. I ask the two, "Ready for the last kilometers?" "I'm looking forward to it," Eve says. We pack away the tent and gear and start walking. The forest scares me less today than it did yesterday. It somehow seems to have calmed down. Perhaps the trees needed the refreshing rain as much as we did. Now and then we deviate to avoid a larger puddle, but otherwise it is easy again to cross the empty strip between the plants and the forest. The closer we come to the forest, the more majestic it seems to me. At first, Adam and Eve kept joking in low voices, but then they gradually also fall under its spell. It is only when we get really close that we can fathom the true dimension of these giant trees. We stop about 100 meters from the boundary. From the outside, the forest looks to me like a green New York. The naked trunks seem to soar upward like skyscrapers, and their leaves appear far, far above us. In this place, whoever reaches up highest is the winner. From afar, everything seems to be in constant motion, but the gigantic leaves, which must be 10 meters long, are so far above us, we are hardly conscious of them individually. It feels like entering a huge cathedral with a roof 200 meters high, supported by the many columns of tree trunks. No sunlight shines through the dome of this building because all of it is intercepted by the leaves and turned into energy. Nonetheless, it is not dark down here.
"Look," says Eve, her mouth wide open.
Adam, standing next to her, is also amazed. A fairy tale landscape lies before us. It shines in sparkling colors, promising gold and gems. Aladdin's treasure chamber would pale compared to this. We enter the forest. The ground is covered by plants we have not seen earlier.
"Fungi, like giant mushrooms," Adam says.
Indeed, the plants each have a stem reaching into the ground and a cap at the top. It is these caps that radiate the multicolored light. There are numerous varieties, small ones with stripes issuing from the center, larger ones with small spots, medium-sized ones with trembling lamellas on the facing side, and big wrinkled ones. Plus, there are even specimens that can barely fit under Jay's 2-meter-tall robot body. All the different shapes radiate light in various colors, but there seems to be no correlation between shape and color. This accounts for the overwhelming, magical effect the interior of this gigantic cathedral has on us. It alone makes the entire journey worthwhile. I watch Adam and Eve. They are just as impressed as I am. Adam takes a few steps into the forest and then sits down, leaning against one of the gigantic trees.
"This is where we will build our base," he proclaims.
I feel like warning him. We must first check if everything is as harmless as it looks, and why the forest conveys this majestic impression. Mentioning this right now, though, might not be a good idea. Adam has earned this moment, which for him probably has a lot to do with the feeling of having arrived. Eve sits down next to him. They sit shoulder to shoulder and observe the miracles of the forest. In the meantime, I start my analysis. A few days from now, we are going to need a shelter that protects us from the next flare. The first surprise during my analysis comes from the mushrooms. They all have one thing in common. They turn the hard UV radiation of the sun into energy. Whatever they do not need, they emit again via phosphorescence. And this could be interesting for us. I have to find out what part of the hard radiation the mushrooms can reject. While I do not think it would be enough to just sit out the next superflare under one of the tall mushrooms, I am sure we can somehow integrate these plants into our plans. The second surprise also comes from the mushrooms. Their caps are made of a soft organic material, so theoretically they could be edible. This is both good and bad news for us. It is good because we could turn them into food with little effort. We could even consume them raw, although they might taste really bitter due to the high mineral content. It is bad
because nature never creates something edible without a reason. If there is something edible, animals that live off that food source cannot be too far away. If we are lucky, these are nothing more than small, harmless worms, like those found in mushrooms on Earth. Otherwise, a horde of mushroom-eating dinosaurs might charge through the forest now and then, goring anything that is not a tree trunk. Or the worms could be a species that would burrow through your stomach lining if you were to accidentally swallow one, and then it might build a nest inside you, eventually releasing millions of new worms. After my experiences in the mountain pass, I will not make the same mistake of associating small size with the absence of danger. The third fact, found by my analysis, does not surprise me much, given our earlier experiences. The mushrooms resemble their terrestrial counterparts because their roots join in a mycelium, together with the roots of many other specimens. This appears to be a heritage they have in common with the leafy plants in the steppes. Are all the mushrooms in the forest part of the same individual? Or is there warfare here, like in the steppes, about which we have to be very careful? Discovery number 4 offers the third surprise when I remove a small piece from one of the tree trunks. It is extremely hard, but my strength is just sufficient to remove it. I probably will not be able to cut down an entire tree. I would never have guessed that the material of the tree trunk would be very, very similar to that of the hair plants. It consists of small, individual chambers filled with a soft material, and it appears both species have the same kind of roots. In that case, the trees must represent individuals making it on their own, just like the hair plants. While we certainly are not yet familiar with the entire ecosystem, it seems to me that the division here runs not between plants and animals, but between leafy plants and hair plants. Thus, leafy plants are connected to each other, while hair plants are solitary. Accordingly, the frogs in the mountain pass would belong to the hair plant group, because they lacked a physical connection. On this planet, the question of whether a species moves, and how fast it moves, seems to play no role for its evolutionary family tree. I decide I have gathered enough information for today. I slowly walk to the tree near where Adam and Eve are sitting. Along the way, I break off a chunk of mushroom. I divide it in two and offer it to Adam and Eve. "Salt and bread," I say. "That's how you greet guests in my home country. I will have the fabricators make some salt, but the mushroom is just as nutritious as bread." Eve takes a piece first, and then Adam reaches for his. "A bit slimy," says Eve, "but the taste is tolerable. It is reminiscent of Napa cabbage, though not quite as bitter." "Napa cabbage?" Adam stares at her skeptically. "You have never eaten Napa cabbage in your entire life." "No, I haven't. But I've read cookbooks, and whenever they mentioned Napa cabbage, I imagined it to have this kind of taste."